Hi everyone, this is Jonathan Corey from Precursive. Welcome back to our latest episode of the Precursive Perspective. And in this season, as I've explained, we've been looking to bring a range of different perspectives, both some operator experience from the world of SaaS. We've got some enterprise tech experience, which is one of the guests I have on today. And of course, we've also heard from some luminaries in the VC and private equity world. So, you know, an exciting season. And as, you know, as always, I'm very lucky to be able to welcome guests who have a rich and varied career in the world of B2B tech, customer success and professional services. And today is no exception. I'm extremely privileged and happy to have Himanshu Kapoor, who is customer success leader at Google, join us all the way from San Francisco and indeed on your PTO, Himanshu. So thank you ever so much. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you, Jonathan. And glad to be here.
And happy Diwali.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And today is an important Indian festival for sure. So great to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for those tuning in, can you give us a little bit about your background and some of your career highlights, as it were, because you've got a rich and varied career today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here and to share my insights. So essentially, I have been in customer-facing leadership roles all my career, have focused on building customer-facing teams, have been in customer success, professional services, and sales leadership roles. And some of the companies I've had the honor of working for have been IBM, Infosys, Cisco, and currently at Google. And maybe I'll spend a minute about some of my recent experiences. I was a director of customer experience at Cisco for a bit over 5 years. Exciting time to be at Cisco at that time. Essentially, the whole company was transforming from an on-prem hardware model selling routers and switches to selling software subscriptions. So it was a great opportunity to be a part of Cisco at that time, led transformation and led teams and transformation of some of Cisco's key customers with Cisco's software solutions. And also, we took to market some really innovative CX offers, really the offers which brought together human touch and digital scale together. So fortunate to have had some great experiences there. Joined Google Cloud in 2019. Great time to join Google Cloud. We're really starting the customer success org. So I was one of the very first customer success employees hired when we started Google Cloud. Especially in the early days, really exciting to play a key role in building that organization. And I would say, especially in a consumption model. Now, we have a lot of industry standard playbooks for the subscription models, but consumption model, we're still scratching the surface on what customer success looks like in a consumption world. So that was interesting for sure. And then also had the opportunity of leading cross-functional teams, driving transformation of key Google Cloud customers with Google Cloud, and also directly influence the revenue growth. Because one central theme that you would see in my career, it's been about revenue growth, and it's been about also in a consumption world, customer success is really focused on revenue growth. So that's a key priority in addition to making the customer successful. So I've had some great experiences there as well. In summary, I would say that it's been essentially customer success, professional services, sales leadership, and also in customer success, fortunate to have had seen both the perspectives, how does it differ from a subscription and how is it in the consumption world. So that's in a nutshell, Jonathan, but happy to answer more questions.
No, absolutely. And precisely the reason, obviously, why, well, you and I connected originally a little while back, but why I approached you about, you know, talking is that, you know, it's, people who've been in, you know, the industry, you know, a reasonable amount of time, who've bear witness to some of those changes and that type of experience at Cisco, seeing a move from on-prem to software subscription, it's absolutely not as easy as it sounds, right? And there's a huge amount of, there's a huge amount of effort that goes into that, you know, by the company, by the people, and also by the customers. So definitely want to sort of tease out some of the experiences across what has been a storied career. One of the things you and I talked about previously was, that you've seen customer success almost very much from kind of the ground up in some of the organizations that you've worked in, and you've worked with some of the, obviously the leaders in those organizations. The pandemic has very much shone a light on the importance of CS for men. Feel that this has permanently shifted the perception of CS for the market as a large and for the companies that operate within it?
Absolutely, Jonathan. So I would say that if we look at the pandemic, essentially one key trend I saw was that it was getting very challenging to get new customers. So the top of the funnel, getting new customers was getting extremely challenging. So it kind of enhanced the importance of existing customers and growing them. And at the same time, across industries, there were so many existing customers for these SaaS vendors who were really also facing the impact of the pandemic. So they were at a point like when you face a financial impact, essentially what you do is you consolidate vendors, you look at cutting costs. So all the leaders I interacted with were really thinking about which is the vendor we need to live with, and what are the vendors we can consolidate out. And no wonder the vendors they continued with were the ones where they were actually getting a combination of the best customer experience. So I saw easy to work with. And also in addition to that, they were getting real customer outcomes. And those were the vendors that they continued with. And there is no other org other than customer success, which really is focused on customer experience and customer outcomes. So from my perspective, my experiences were that the pandemic really emphasized and underscored the importance of customer success. And I think that trend is going to continue as we move forward.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree with you more. When you talk about real outcomes, I think sometimes there's a lot of focus about, outcomes, both in selling, but also in customer success. How easy do you think it is for vendors to really capture that in a meaningful way? And I guess just what I mean by that is if you sell, let's say you sell a piece of infrastructure, for example, that demonstrates within a 6 month period significant cost savings, and it's very obvious, it's quite easy for that customer to perhaps articulate the value and the outcome that that investment has driven. But for some organizations, that can be a little bit more nuanced. What's your take on how easy it is for people to be able to communicate and articulate these real outcomes?
Absolutely. I would say, Jonathan, that first of all, to answer your question, it's absolutely not easy. So it's an ongoing process. In my experience, I was able to drive some programs exactly on this vein at Cisco, and we scaled it out across the Americas. But net, my experience has been that, A, it's not easy, but there are ways around. So what we did at Cisco, what I was able to do was look at industry benchmark first. Gartner has some metrics about what's the cost of an outage, what's the cost of a security breach. There are starting points there. Then you work with the customer to really understand their business. For retail, a retail store, a router in a retail store going down is really direct impact on their cash register at that retail store. So then you work with that customer to really understand what it means for their business. And the other thing I would say, moving to the SaaS model, and it's also about agility. The old model where you did do an Oracle implementation, which will take 2 years, and then you have a very robust approach of value realization, which is more oriented towards a 2-year implementation. In the new world where we're doing SaaS and the customer is expecting value very fast, I think it's also a function of ongoing value realization. It's not one time that you do value realization. Throughout the customer's journey, there are different steps you take them along, and you do ongoing value realization in incremental steps. I see it more as an incremental journey, partnering with the customer, as compared to you do it once and you're done.
Yeah. Okay. Couldn't agree with you more. I mean, we see that with our customers, because you know, they're in the world of services, and very oftentimes the initial kind of value point is bringing order to the chaos, right? Having, you know, having all of their services data in one place, being able to actually see people's availability and their capacity, you know, things like this, which are oftentimes very manual. And then once they sort of have that order, they move on to that, then how can we tweak things and make value delivery much, and that experience much easier. So that really resonates with me. I think that incremental value realization is a key thing for most CSMs to be able to grapple with. And then when you think about the building blocks of the successful customer success organizations that you've worked in, what does that anatomy of a world-class CS organization look like in terms of things like strategy and people?
Absolutely, Jonathan. So I would say that, I'll keep it simple. There are various building blocks, but let me talk about the top three, four. In my experience, the most important is alignment in this, with this, between the CS charter and what the company's CEO's priority is. So that executive sponsorship, complete alignment with what success metrics that CS is measured on, and make sure it is eye to eye aligns with what the CEO's vision is, absolutely key. There are some nuances between subscription and consumption models as well. So there are some models, my guidance would be, like, if any of my peers are setting up customer success in a consumption model, we should not go with what has worked in the subscription world, just that playbook. We need to make sure that you're aligning with the CEO's priorities and the vision. That's going to be one. The other thing I would say, that's kind of the starting point, but on an ongoing basis, making sure it's apparent to the C-suite on what is the direct impact in terms of top line and bottom line from CS. I think that has to be absolutely clear. Because if we look at it, yes, CS is there to make the customer successful, but it is also there to grow the revenue for the company. So making sure we have a alignment on the financial impact of CS will really help in getting the budgets, the funding, etc. So I would say that's one. The commercial part, I would say some CS leaders are not that comfortable with it, but it's a business that we are running. So it's paramount to be comfortable with the ROI from the organization and making sure everybody accepts that.
I have a question then for you, because you talk about CS and the impact, for example, on the financials of the business, the top line and the bottom line. In one of the things that kind of we see is that, you know, in organizations that have more complex products that they're delivering, the world of services and success have to work together, right? And that's something we're going to explore a little bit later on in this conversation as well. And so, you know, services organizations very oftentimes are measured on margin, right? And success measured on retention and growth. Now, you talk about CS's impact on the bottom line, and I would put forward that CS done right drives high levels of profitability. And when you don't get customer success right, you end up having to invest much more services, product time, engineering time, to play catch up, and therefore you lose, you know, your leaking cost. I'm curious to know about what you think about that in terms of that harmonization between CS and the profitability piece, because profit in CS sometimes is a bit of a dirty word.
No, I'm with you. So I would say, Jonathan, I would tie it to the trends I've seen, I've been fortunate to see over the last few years, where it's CS is, like, earlier we used to think of CS as a person, CSM. The new world, yep, that I'm seeing, it's CS is not just the CSM, it's bringing together human touch and digital experiences. And it's not about high touch or low touch. But in my experience, I've had the opportunity of working with some awesome companies where we haven't looked at it as high touch or low touch. We have looked at it as bringing together human touch and digital adoption experiences. And in our world, CS has been that adoption journey, a digital adoption journey that you're scaling out to all customers. which really benefits from a profitability perspective as well. Like companies are thinking about bringing CS offers into basically CX offers, customer experience offers, which they sell at a very good margin. So I think there is also that nuance that CS is not just the cost of a person, it's all about digital capabilities and giving a delightful experience to customers at every tier.
Yeah, okay. I like that. I mean, I think the language that you use is really so rich in terms of, like, I can quite clearly feel and understand what you're talking about. We were, like, my head of customer success and I were talking about, I mean, we're a very, very different size business to, you know, the Cisco's and the Google of this world. But as we're scaling, we're always talking about, like, what's repeatable, what's scalable, and what's really going to impact the customer. And it's this blend of literally the conversation earlier today with Anna was around this human touch. But the way that you put it as digital adoption experience, that really sums up what we're talking about when we were talking about having scalable digital assets that your community of customers can access and learn from. So I think the way that you put that is so spot on. I'm just curious, do you think that language, getting the words right around this, it might sound a bit basic, but it's so important because it kind of sets the tone, doesn't it?
Absolutely, Jonathan, absolutely. And I would say that in terms of one paradigm, as I talk to my peers, I think the old school thinking is sometimes high touch versus digital touch, and like digital touch is a bad word, as if you're not giving the customer the best experience. I would say, in my experience, digital adoption experiences that we have built give a customer a much better customer experience, which no human can ever do. It's like telemetry coming from products and showing them exactly this is where they are. These are the five things they need to do now. No human can ever do it. So I think there is a lot of value of technology in CS, and actually not just to save costs, but to enhance the customer experience.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Cool. So moving on, one of the things that you touched on earlier was that the importance of the alignment between the customer success charter and the CEO vision. And I want to talk about another form of alignment, which is this convergence that we see between primarily the worlds of sales, services, and customer success. Now, you've worn, you know, all of those hats, right, in your career. And I think the best companies understand that this cross-functional alignment is very important, that you need to build the organizational muscle between teams as well as within teams to be a successful business. And that on the flip side, when things go wrong, accidents tend to happen at intersections, right? So talk to me about your perspective on this convergence and what you see happening here.
So Jonathan, I would say that in my experience, now as I was alluding to, have had the opportunity of being engaged in both subscription and consumption world. So there are a bit of nuances that I'll bring up there. Now, subscription world, there are lots of industry standard playbooks. I think we have a lot of models about racy between sales and CS. I think that's there. The consumption model it has been a lot of learning for me, to be honest. In a consumption model, you have sales engaged throughout the customer journey. The sales is also responsible for consumption. So making sure that, especially in a consumption world where we are still new in terms of customer success, complete alignment with sales is, I would say, the most important thing. So to make sure we're not stepping on each other's toes, still we are not increasing cost and two people doing the same role. I think it's a question of how do you make sure that simple questions like who owns the customer? I would say that the company owns the customer. Sales doesn't own the customer. Neither does customer success own the customer. The company owns the customer. So things like that, I think getting clarity on those and getting alignment with the sales leadership and the CS leadership and the CEO, and making sure all that message goes down is like absolutely key. Because the other nuance I will bring up is, in a consumption world, there is no sales and post-sales. Like CS leaders who have been through the subscription model, it's like, okay, sales owns sales and CS owns post-sales. In consumption, there is nothing like sales and post-sales. You do a commit, you could do a $500 million commit, but it means nothing. The customer could spend $0 and nobody gets anything. So I think it's an ongoing sale. It's a continuous sale. There is no post-sales world in a consumption model. And hence, kind of that right. complete alignment between sales and CS is, like, I would say, the most important thing I would bring up. The other thing I would bring up is, irrespective of the model, in the theme of making CS also, like, CS leaders also savvy from a commercial perspective, I see a lot of companies looking at encouraging CSMs to have or incentivizing them to have an expansion target. I think that's something we should seriously think about. And and really help sales focus on hunting them, which they do best. So I think that's the other theme that I'm seeing in the industry.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the CS piece around sales owning sales and CS owning upsell, for example. I always think you can find that there's this, if you're selling something which is relatively complicated. So for example, we have some companies who graduate from one of our products to another. They start with one of our project management solutions or a customer onboarding platform, and they might over time develop more billable professional services, which they then want to manage in a different way. And so that might then engender a sales cycle, because they're going to buy a more expansive product from us. Now, customer success absolutely knows how that product works, knows how to drive adoption and value from that solution, knows the types of challenges that our customers face, because they're working with clients that use that more expanded solution. But are they capable of running what will turn into a 60, 90 day potentially sales cycle, even if it's within an existing customer? That's a very different proposition. And I think that there's always this, when you get into that gray territory, you know, where it's a little bit more unclear as to who's best, not necessarily the knowledge, as it were, but best equipped to do it. I think in that scenario, it's got to be CS scoping something and handing it over to sales. And I just think that there's this, I almost think that there's sometimes within the industry, there's this obsession with who needs to do what. And I think businesses need to realize that there will be occasions where there's this gray area and you need to be able to flex. And again, it comes back to these departments working together better, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. And I think sometimes, handoff is sometimes construed as a bad word, because often handoffs don't happen, I guess, that seamlessly. So I look at it as partnership as well between sales and CS. Again, I'll bring up, especially in the consumption world, because there is no concept of a handoff in the consumption world. You are basically, the company's business is to grow the consumption, whether it is sales or CS, it's the same goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So When you look at the world of services, right, you've talked about the importance of experience. Do you see that world of services having, like, there being a more integrated services offering where you've got like CSPS learning, et cetera, being bundled together into like enablement? Is that something that you're seeing?
Absolutely. Almost like the companies I have been a part of, and when I talk to my peers in the industry, that's exactly where most companies are going. And if you look at monetizing CS, there are two ways companies are looking at it, right? One is you look at the revenue growth component. CS is a revenue driver. CS is a consumption driver. So you kind of give them the expansion goal. And the other perspective that many companies are doing, many of the largest companies are doing today, is combining all these CS professional services, learning, support into things they call success tracks, which is really something that the customer purchases, but it's really the whole goal of all these components, CS, PS, support, learning, is to give value to the customer. And the whole thinking is, if you bring them together, you're amplifying the value to the customer. So absolutely, because the whole goal, I would say, in a nutshell, is about giving value to the customer so that they buy more. So I'm absolutely seeing that for sure.
Yeah, and also the other thing is, from a customer perspective, I also think that something that I've found in my experience is that sometimes companies are a little bit reticent to talk to the customer about like chargeable services or chargeable success packs, the feature, services or training or CS time, right? They're a bit reticent of that. Like, obviously some people have got a target on it and they're very much driven on it. But I think from a customer perspective, what I'm actually seeing is that it gives the customer a lot of reassurance, right? Because what increasingly companies are thinking is like, how do I deploy my resource, my asset, as effectively work, which is likely arguably with our customer, and therefore this package that you're offering me frees up my time, my team's time to spend more time with our customer. To be honest, I'm quite happy to pay for that.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
No, absolutely, Jonathan. And I would say, again, some of the largest companies that I have been a part of, or when I talk to my peers in these companies, I think it's about these success tracks, which is, again, not the person. It's the technology platform. It's customer success as a service. It's about scale. So I think the other theme I would bring out is any CS leader building a customer success organization from scratch, think about scale early. And all these packages do a couple of things. A, they make it easy for the company to organization to scale customer success, because you're not scaling with people, you're scaling with digital capabilities, and you're giving repeatability to the customer and tangible outcomes. So all these success tracks have tangible outcomes, tangible services from customer success or PS that they are going to get. Because sometimes you land a person, the person could be doing anything, and then 2 years later, the customer didn't get value. But when you kind of make it offers, the customer is clear on the outcome. You have a repeatable methodology. It's about customer success as a service. That's where I see the industry moving. As compared to, you have a CSM, the CSM will do anything for you.
Yeah, no, agreed. And that CSM is then constantly on the hook for being the person conducting the orchestra and bringing in all these different resources in very ad hoc ways, which for a services organization is very difficult to manage, right? Because it's very bitty. It's very bitty. If you've got these productized services, these repeatable methodologies, these menu of options, this success track, like that's much easier for your colleagues, in different teams to deploy, because there's a set budget, they know the timelines, they know how it's going to be delivered, and it's much easier to manage. So super, super interesting and very insightful there. I think focusing on scale early, you're preaching to the choir. Now, you mentioned your part of your career, you've seen that transition from on-premise to software subscription. I'd like to talk just finally, really about kind of what we see, which is this new wave of high velocity services delivery and, driven by this new era of SaaS and companies, which are focused on building products that can be deployed much more quickly than perhaps products have been in the past. But also by the fact of customer expectations changing. And we live in this kind of convenience economy where in our social lives and in our home lives, it's very easy to get access to things online, get things delivered to our houses, get transportation very easily, at the click of a button on our phone. Digital button.
No, absolutely.
Push of a screen, as it were. So I think just talk to me a little bit just initially about why has professional services had to evolve in this environment, in your opinion?
I would say profession. So the world, as you just alluded to, right, bang on, the world has changed from doing a large implementation and an Oracle implementation, an SAP implementation that will take 2 years, to a customer buying a subscription, and if they don't get value in the next month, they're moving all from the product. So the time to value has, and the expectations of the customers have really changed dramatically. That's one. So companies are looking at every function, whether it's PS or CS or enablement, it's about getting the customer to value fast so that they stay with the product and grow the spend with the product. So A, that's the market trend that PS organizations have to work with and the context they have to operate in. I'm seeing more and more that while all the old metrics of margin utilization are still important, what I'm hearing CEOs tell their PS leaders is asking them to focus on helping getting to time to value faster and helping grow the ARR. At the same time, don't lose too much money. So it's not about, I'm seeing about, it's not about, okay, we're going to sell a PS project at 60% margin, which we did used to sell in the past. Now it's about, Let's build very agile offers, which give the customer value quickly, which is really delivering real outcomes to the customer, and the outcomes are vary from customer to customer. So there is some partnership with the customer required on that. But do all that, but don't lose too much money. So I would say that we should not forget about margin utilization, etc. But we should just keep them in the context of the bigger picture, where it is about getting to value faster.
Yeah, I think there's still this paradox, right? I was talking to Dave Kellogg, who you may know, right? Who's bit of a luminary in the world of SaaS, and is very, very passionate about the world of services and metrics. Point he made was that you've still got this paradox or this contradiction between, like you said, the CEO saying, drive faster value for our customers, but don't lose money, right? Yeah. And then you've got situations where it's like, well, great example, we've got this customer, we're behind on the deployment, we need to invest more time, so we're actually going to lose margin, but we're going to get them to value. And it's like, there's these trade-offs in that world, because the way that people in services are incentivized might be on revenue and margin, not on time to value and ARR. Now, that's not always, that's changing a lot. I see it changing very rapidly. Do you think that there will be, some form of like standardization? Because, you know, in sales, kind of sales compensation, you know, revenue operations, a lot of this stuff has really been standardized in SaaS. So when you move from company to company, it's very similar. Do you think the same thing will happen in services in terms of how services is incentivized, and it'll become the norm to incentivize towards ARR value versus the traditional way of revenue and margin?
Yes. So in my experience, one of the companies I've had the opportunity of working with is exactly going through this transformation, where they have a number of security products, which are SaaS solutions. So they're actually moving their, so earlier their services used to be a separate P&L. They're actually moving their high velocity services offers, PS offers, back into the product. So then you are making it a common incentivizing, giving the same incentive for sales. So it's not about, you basically make productizing that services offer and selling it with the product like a kickstart, which is to get the customer to value very quickly. So that's a trend I'm absolutely seeing, especially with these high velocity SaaS solutions where the value has to be given in the next month.
Yeah. I think where a lot of companies struggle is you've got people who've grown up.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the age profile of people in professional services, for example, versus customer success, the professional services environment tends to be an older age profile, right? You have people that have kind of come up via perhaps technical backgrounds into business analysis, into services, or they've kind of grown up in that space. And I think one of the challenges is you've got a population of people within services who've come from this old world, who are then sort of changing, they're sort of rebuilding the plane as they're flying the plane, right? Kind of career-wise and function-wise, because you're getting into this space where it's like, whereas, you know, I used to have my PS team, I put one person on one project, or you're going to work across these two projects. We've got a customer where one PS consultant is working across 8 pieces of work. And so they got 8 pieces of work, which is 8 customers, like 5 stakeholders per customer, 40 tasks, like per project. Right, so you start doing the math, you've got this volume of things to keep track of, manage, you know, coordinate, you know, it's just exploded in terms of its complexity and pressure. And so you've got a lot of people who are kind of going through that learning journey of this old world to new world, which is why the role of technology and automation is well, in our opinion, so critical. Do you see people who face that struggle? Is that something you've experienced?
So, Jonathan, you bang on. I would say people have gone. So, I was talking to a friend who was a VP of professional services, then became a VP of customer success. Exactly the same orientation he had to go through in terms of rethinking, right? It's not about the PS margin. PS is just one tool to drive ARR. I would say in my experience, I was fortunate to have had experience in, so I've been in pure play services companies, I've been in product companies, I've been in sales.
Yeah.
So which has kind of in my career, in my mind, given me empathy for each function because I've been in that function, right? So I think from that perspective, it's been thankfully more seamless for me, but yes, people who have been in PS delivery specifically for a lot of their careers, and then many of them actually have transitioned. Many of the colleagues I've worked with in the past are VP of CS now, and they have been going through this rethinking, really, in terms of their approach to the market.
Yeah, so GE at a point in time, and I think Schlumberger as well, were famous for the rotations, right? You would work in different departments to get exposure to different areas of the business. I think it was one of the things Jack Welch brought out in GE many years ago. I think that kind of day in the life of the shoot, like, you know, day in the life, week in the life between services success and sales is so important. We had a difference of opinion between our services team and our CS team. And what was really interesting when we kind of got to the bottom of it was that where the conflict had come from a good place. And it was kind of a lack of understanding about the worlds which seem very close, but actually day to day, you're doing the mechanics of what you're doing are very, very different. And I think that exposure is so important. It's why it's interesting when you've got services and CS reporting up into a CCO, like that CCO needs to have that like maturity and empathy for that organization underneath them, because they are too, you know, the mechanics of those two worlds can be very contradictory, but ultimately the goal, the modern mission is the same, right? It's value, customer, you know, all of these types of things. Well, listen, I've greatly appreciated your time. You were gonna say something?
No, absolutely. I was going to add, Jonathan, that also without losing too much money, and that's where all that the PS team cares about is still important. We shouldn't forget of that.
Yeah, definitely. You can't do it. You know, you've got to understand the value of an hour of services, that's for sure. And the cost of it as well. Well, listen, it's been fabulous having you on. I think I just want to try and sum up some of the amazing, I think, insights to come out of today. So I'm not going to paraphrase or get this wrong. I think there was a few things that really struck a chord. I think one of them was this idea that it is challenging to be able to capture and articulate real outcomes for customers sometimes, but starting with perhaps a bit of research in terms of industry trends, in terms of benchmarks. And so I think that there's things that people can do publicly by our analyst firms. One of the things that we do, for example, is we measure for our customers the average time to value. And we have to obviously they capture it in our tool, we then are capturing it customer by customer. And we can see for certain sort of segments of SaaS that average time to value is X or it's Y. So I think that beginning with that data-driven approach and using external and internal inputs will help you quantify some of the real outcomes. I thought that was a great insight. And also, I think not one and done. If you're in customer success services, put not one and done somewhere near you and think about that ongoing incremental value realization, because we're all under judgment perpetually, whether you're on a monthly subscription or an annual subscription. I think the alignment piece as well, really that dovetailing of making sure you can align, you know, your CS charter, your CS mindset with your CEO vision. The CS metrics should be enabling the company goals. I think that's absolutely key. And I think, you know, finally, kind of that modern world, which really I can hear your consumption experience, a lot of that actually is really kind of the mindset is really applicable within subscription, which is this idea of like, it's not one or the other. It's not human touch, tech touch, this, that, the other. It's how do you get that blend of human touch with digital experience, right? And really the automation should allow you to be more human.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And digital touch just does not mean a bad customer experience. In my experience, it often means a better customer experience than any human could ever provide.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, listen, thank you ever so much. And thank you to all of you for tuning in. For more of this type of content, head over to precursive.com, where you'll find obviously the rest of all of our podcasts. You will find various white papers and playbooks. We have some for how you scale customer onboarding in SaaS companies. We've got the controversially titled Traditional Services Delivery is Dead. And we will bring out this white paper on fixing the capacity, which will be available to those that register. So, Himanshu, thank you ever so much. Have a wonderful day with the family. Thank you for taking the time, and I'll let you get on with this.
Awesome. Thank you, Jonathan. Great to be here.
Take care. The best.
Thanks.